Hello and welcome to Tech Enthusiast. I'm Neil.
And I'm Simon. And we're going to have to start the episode 2 show with a list of retractions. You go first, Neil.
Okay, yeah. It's been a little while since the first show, but basically when I was talking about Xbox backwards compatibility, I made a rather optimistic comment about the fact that if you'd played that game in the past, then that would automatically be in your library of played games that would then work on the Xbox One.
That's definitely how it should work.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, hopefully in the future we're going to get to that.
But that was optimistic, and it is the case. Obviously with digital games, if you own the game, then the game is there if it's backwards compatible. However, with non-digital games, you have to put a disc in, which then downloads some content from the online store, and then you can play the game, but you would have to have the physical
disc.
So,
say you've got the physical disc, could I rent a game or borrow a game from a friend if they've got unique IDs?
I think you could, but the thing is, again, the way it works with normal discs anyway is that even once it's installed on the hard drive, the disc has to be in the disc drive for you to play it.
I wonder if that's going to be required with backwards compatibility.
I think it probably will be.
That's something to look up for next time, Neil.
I don't think there's been any announcements about that, but I can't see why it'd work differently to the existing system.
True. Well, my retraction is an interesting retraction. I stated that Taylor Swift was on Apple Music. The day after the show, she wasn't on Apple Music. Fast forward a few days, she writes an open letter, Tim Cook does a tweet, Eddie Q's all over it. Taylor Swift is on Apple Music. A few days later, 1989, Taylor's biggest selling album, is not on Apple Music. A few days later, 1989 is on Apple Music. So technically, I was right all along. It's just other media that got it wrong. I was there at the forefront saying Taylor was on it. Everyone else, just, they were wrong, Neil. I was the one.
She made you jump through a few hurdles, though, didn't she?
She's worth it, though. She's got She's got good music. You know, I've been listening to it a little bit on Apple Music, but I think the standout feature so far for me, or maybe the feature I'm using the most, is definitely Beats Radio.
Yeah.
It's great to hear Zayn again. I was always a big fan of Zayn's show on Radio 1. And you know what? They've stopped him talking so much. Even though I was a big fan of Zayn, it can bang on a bit.
Yeah, but I think that's indicative of Radio 1 in general. Some of the big Radio 1 DJs that I always like Joe Wiley and Mark and Lard and people like that were big talkers. And but it's non-commercial radio, so there's no adverts.
Yeah, well, there's adverts.
Well, yeah.
Oh, one on the BBC, sorry. Not on the BBC, there's no. Although the Beats 1 adverts do catch me off guard. I'm really not too sure the crossover of clientele with the W Hotel and McDonald's, which were in the same commercial spot.
You flip the W, you've got an M. So that's that's clearly what it is.
Yeah, that is definitely what it is. Although I have stayed at the W multiple times and I do eat at McDonald's. I am that tiny crossover.
You are their demographic.
Oh, God, they've got me, haven't they?
They have.
Like, this guy likes luxury hotels when someone else is paying. McDonald's when he's paying himself.
Buy the short and curlies.
They have got me. I'm still on the free trial, but I'm going to stick with it. You know, for me, another great thing was you can say sort of my top music for a particular year. And then when I said my year, my absolute life anthem, Eye of the Tiger. It's almost like I was born in the perfect year. Just for that one song.
Yeah, we listened to mine, and mine was pretty dire.
Disco.
I was born at the end of the '70s, so it was the tail end of disco, and it was pretty dreadful.
Hey, there was some good. I can't remember his first name. One of the Gibbs.
Oh yeah, there was one with the.
God, I should be able to remember the names. That's terrible.
One of the heebie-jeebies.
Because I do actually, I like the Bee Gees for a disco era. The Bee Gees, fantastic.
Okay.
So far, I've admitted to liking Taylor Swift, and my music taste is sounding suspect.
We'll not go into mine. So,
yeah, it's good though. I am enjoying it. In fact, you know what? It's made me dig out my Bluetooth speaker.
Oh, right.
So now, because you know, gotta have more than one Apple device in the room, haven't you? So I'm streaming Apple Music from the iPad to the speaker, and then just still getting to use my phone and computer. Because basically I'm trying to use different devices because of voiceover, you know. If I do it all on one device, it gets a bit, well, I've just got to get on my battery, so I spread it over.
Yeah.
I've not listened to music so much since the release of Apple. Even when I had Spotify.
Yeah.
I did not listen to Spotify as much as I listened to Apple Music. And it's great for running.
All right, cool.
I'm using it so much for running. And yeah, I'm getting to listen to different stuff. And again, Beats Music has introduced me to music I haven't heard in a long time or have never heard. I was listening to a show, I can't remember his name, you know his name, the guy from...
Josh Homme, wasn't
it? Yeah. And I think I only knew three of the songs.
Yeah.
But it was great to be introduced to music, new and old, that I'd never heard. Because it's crazy, really, that through the 80s and 90s, there's so much music that I've never heard.
Yeah, totally. I've become a bit of a cranky old man on the porch where, as far as music's concerned. It's just like, it's not like it used to be.
I know, we always said we'd never become that. Although I'm staying current, I'm all about Taylor Swift. And what's that? Oh, God. I can't remember his name, so I'm not even going to say it. No.
This is good.
I know. I should... I'm terrible with names.
Never mind.
I know. Trying to stay current.
Yeah. We'll let people know for the next show what,
yeah.
what you were actually thinking of.
Yeah. Well, I got my Apple Watch.
All right. Yeah, cool. Any good?
I still haven't found, and I don't think I ever will, a killer feature that I think this is why I own an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
I like the heart rate tracking, but arguably I did already have something that was tracking my heart rate.
Yeah.
So now I've just got a different device that's doing it. I think it's slightly, well, I'm saying it's slightly more accurate because I've got a resting heart rate of 39 using Apple Watch. So I'm like, that's right. The other one said it was 49. So that one's wrong.
Okay.
Because Apple Watches are far fitter. So.
Far fitter or practically dead, depending on how you look at it.
I prefer to think so fit that my heart rate is really low.
Yeah.
Now, I think I am actually in mid-40s. I think I just looked out that one day and got a 39.
Yeah. Maybe you'd had a nap and not realised.
Yeah. It probably was while I was sleeping, to be honest. But the moving thing's good.
Yeah.
But I'm really into fitness trackers anyway.
Yeah.
So it's far more accessible than any fitness tracker I've ever used.
Yeah.
Because VoiceOver is built into the watch. So it does read my fitness data out to me. But all the fitness trackers I've ever been willing to buy always tied into the phone. So it's a case of getting my phone out. But I suppose it's removed that step of taking my phone out to check my current fitness stats. Although, other good app for me, the weather.
Oh, right.
Because the weather's always a tricky one for me.
Yeah.
So that's quite good because when you open the weather app with VoiceOver, there's a dial so you can run your finger around a dial. Obviously, the times of the day, so it tells you what the weather's going to be like at that time of day.
Cool.
So for me, it's really good to get a breakdown of the weather. Notifications are kind of handy. I think what it has made me do more than anything is only react to important notifications.
Yeah.
Because now my watch must be on the side. I'll be typing on the computer. Sorry, my phone. I'm going to say, yeah. Typing on the computer, my watch will trigger a notification. So I'll flick my wrist, it'll read out the notifications. I'll go, no, I don't need that. And then carry on.
Yeah.
So I think it's a neater way for me to access notifications. But I struggle with how public my notifications become.
Yeah.
Because I have to have them read out. If someone sends you a text with a few expletives, and I'm sad, because that has happened since owning the watch.
Right.
I was at the dinner table, the watch went off, and there was a lot of swearing.
Oh dear.
And it's like, oh, not very appropriate when, especially from a business, well, to be honest, I'd probably laugh if I was at business lunch and my watch has expletives. But perhaps with the family, it's definitely not appropriate around the dinner table. Or maybe it's my friend's language that's more inappropriate than the technology. That's what I need to tidy up.
They're just expressing themselves, Simon.
They are. Well, there's, as SpongeBob said, it's sentence enhancing.
Yes.
one of the best episodes of SpongeBob ever. That's definitely worth looking up on YouTube. That. Yeah. I think they called it Sentence Spice.
Yes.
It was a very, very good episode.
So have you dialed down on what notifications you have going to the watch?
Yeah,
I pretty much. Because that could get really irritating.
Inbox, yeah. Being Google's inbox. WhatsApp, messages. I've got rid of Facebook.
Right.
Pretty much WhatsApp, text messages, an email. An inbox is pretty sharp at notifying me of what it believes to be important email.
Yeah.
For some reason, Fark.com's newsletter always sneaks through as an important email. I'm never too sure why that always sneaks through. But apart from that, it's bang on.
Yeah.
And that's really good because now, if I just get an email from my agent or something, as soon as I flick it, the agent's name is read. I'm like, okay, that's probably an email I should actually pay some attention to. So yeah, it's good, but could I live without it? Absolutely. Because it'd just be replaced with something else that tracks my heart rate.
Yeah.
And even, I've got this now, but we were talking earlier on, I'm still going to get the new, well, not the new Misfit, but that Misfit Flash.
Yeah.
Because that sounds really interesting. It can link up to the app. So you've got a Bluetooth button. So I'm sure I can make it do something interesting on if this, then that.
Yeah.
And what is it? $30 for a fitness tracker. Yeah, so,
which is ridiculous.
With £30, no doubt. Well, in fact, I just checked Amazon just a minute ago and it was £30, but they were still listening. It's £50 sale price, original sale price. So I think I'm coming down to £20 in the next couple of weeks.
Crazy.
And I'm going to use that for sleep tracking. In fact, that's the other thing about the Apple Watch. Charging it.
All right.
Because you helped me buy a charging stand, didn't you?
I did, yeah. How's that working out?
When it eventually arrived, after nearly 3 weeks.
Oh, God.
3 weeks. Yeah. And I could have carved it from wood myself in 3 weeks. But the reason I got a charging stand is that when you charge it on the cable, I just should knock it off on the bedside table all the time. So I needed a stand just so it was a bit more stable.
Yeah.
And it's nice, it works. Could I spend a bit of money and got a nicer one? Probably.
Hmm.
But it works. And I think I'm at a point where I'm not going to upgrade now for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe next Apple Watch I'll splash it out and get. Because it took me until the iPhone 6, after owning every single iPhone, to think, maybe I should get a nice case. Because you buy them launch day and you think, I've got to get a case, So you go online and just get any case that fits.
Yeah.
And then you end up going, well, I've got a case. Why have I got to get a nicer case?
Mm.
So I think it's going to be the same thing. I'll eventually...
I had a bit of a thing back with the iPhone 4 where I think I had about 5 or 6 different cases for it. I had one that looked like R2-D2, one that looked like a cassette.
Oh, I remember the cassette one, yeah.
Yeah, I had quite a few different ones. But yeah, I see what you mean, though. And especially with the stand, it's literally just somewhere to let it sit while it charges, to spend a lot of money?
It's too easy to knock off if you haven't got a stand. And I was shocked when I went into the Apple Store and it wasn't an official accessory yet.
Yeah.
Because we popped into the Covent Garden, didn't we?
Yeah, and they didn't have any.
Recommended we go online and buy one from someone else.
Crazy.
Oof, I know. Been a bit fast and loose sending custom elsewhere, I think they were. Yeah.
On the smartwatch thing, I've really enjoyed using my Pebble. I had a Pebble Steel. Still have a Pebble Steel. Unfortunately, it sat on the bedside table, not charged, because for no apparent reason the Bluetooth stopped working. But prior to that, what you were saying then about the kind of with the Misfit with the Bluetooth button, I really liked that when I got in my car. I heard the tone of my phone hooking up to the Bluetooth adapter I got in my car, and I just pressed the button on the Pebble, and all of a sudden my podcasts are playing, and I can listen to them in the car without having to faff about. But I've really enjoyed it, but now the Bluetooth has stopped working and it's a pointless... I can't even use it as a watch, is the really ironic bit, because...
If only add an analog face and mechanism.
Yeah, because it got the time off the phone, and in the part of the process of trying to figure out what was wrong with it, I deleted the app and reinstalled it. It unhooked from the phone and no longer knew what time it was, so...
Does it go to California time?
I think it just basically went because I let the battery run all the way down.
Oh, okay.
And then charged it up. So I think it's literally just it started from whatever time I started charging it.
Okay.
So it's several hours out. And yeah, completely pointless. And I'm trying to get in touch with Pebble. Not proving particularly easy at the moment.
Well, yeah, Pebble.
Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, I enjoyed the watch. Obviously, I was very disappointed just how long the watch took to arrive with the Kickstarter process. But no, the thing that disappointed me, I bought it for a very specific use case. And I was slightly misled by not only Pebble, but Runkeeper.
Yeah.
Because I hoped that the Pebble, you could press one button, Runkeeper would start, and you could go for a run.
Hmm.
That was how it was built to, I believe, in the marketing, but it turned out that wasn't the case. You still got to open the app, start a run, and then only then can the Pebble actually control the run. And
yeah,
it never quite did exactly what I wanted, and the accessibility was obviously incredibly poor. So eventually it got donated to someone that was able to use it. But yeah, it's a good watch for its price point.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like I say, when it was working, I really liked it, but I only bought it in May, and it's now July, and it no longer works. So,
do you know what? I bought an accessible wristwatch called the Bradley.
Yes, I remember.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
I've gone through two.
Really?
Do you know what? I've given up on it now. It's just somewhere in a drawer because it kept breaking.
Yeah.
And they don't have like a support facility in the UK, so you have to send it to China.
Oh, God.
So you send it to China, then it has to come back from China. So you're looking between 6 to 10 weeks to fix it.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, I can buy a new one and you can have it to me the next day.
Yeah.
I feel you should have a better support process than that time frame.
Yeah, I guess it's a tricky one when you're not like a massive multinational company with stuff like that. But yeah, it does. If it's just going
to
break.
Well, that's just it. We've all just come to expect these things, haven't we? Perhaps we're not as forgiving.
First world problems.
And especially anything that starts on Kickstarter. You know, I've finally got my Lima, don't know how you say it, the personal cloud device. I was supposed to receive that. Let's figure this out. In 2015, I was supposed to receive it in January 2014.
Okay.
Which means I will have backed it 6 months before that. So let's say May 2013. So I probably officially backed in April 2013, maybe.
Crikey.
That's off my head, I'm sure. That's probably not wholly accurate. It's definitely 2 years.
Yeah.
And in that 2 years, there's no point in the device anymore.
Right.
I really don't think there's any point in the device. And the reason I say that is because its biggest selling point, which was this unified file system. So you ran this device and it took over your entire file system.
Cool.
So no matter where you saved a file, it all went to the Lima. And then if I booted up another computer elsewhere in the world, my file system would be fully intact, held on this Lima. My mobile phone, my iPad, everything would be into this Lima, which sounded great, but that feature still isn't there. The state in late this year, September, October. But when it took them, you know, they're already 19 months late on delivering the device.
Yeah.
How late are they going to be on actually getting all the features together? But the design of the device, I can see why people like it. It fits in the palm of your hand.
Right.
It's really nice and small. It's great. It's plugging an external hard drive. But the other big reason I'm not particularly enjoying it is it's not accessible. I load up the app in OS X. Nothing's accessible. Nothing's clickable. So it becomes an unenjoyable experience to even own this device.
Yeah.
When you buy something, you want to be able to use it. I don't want to have to get someone else to teach me to use it. Yeah. I want to get it out of the box, plug it in my computer.
And it work.
And it work. Unfortunately, it doesn't. So now I'm having to solve the problem with a Raspberry Pi. So I've got a really strange setup at home at the minute. I've got an SSD in my iMac, which is very small, it's only 256 gig. And I have a 1 terabyte Dropbox account. Yeah. So you can see there's a slight mismatch on size there. A
little bit.
I've got a lot of cloud storage, no local storage. But I do want everything to be moved to my computer still.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the easy solution, is it? Everything that's inside your Dropbox has to be, is what's synced. So essentially, I could put my Dropbox on an external drive.
Yeah.
But then I'd have the whirring fan of an external drive.
Right.
And I didn't pay a lot of money for an iMac to wear a whirring drive. So I want that drive in another room.
Okay, princess.
I know. So the way I've decided to solve it, to make it as complicated as possible,
yeah,
is I'm going to plug it into a Pi.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to run like NetAtalk, do some Apple file sharing. And then I'm going to symlink a folder on the Dropbox to that external drive, but only one folder, send a mass media. It's actually going to be on that external drive in the other room.
Yeah.
So I don't hear the whir.
Right.
Because I can't have it whirring. So, it's a strange setup, but I'll definitely write a little tutorial, because my last Raspberry Pi tutorial, I still get huge, I still get a huge amount of hits for that. So I'm definitely going to write up this tutorial, because when I was Googling around, it took me a lot of Googling to solve the problem. And I can't remember, I ended up on some random website which mentioned it briefly, but it didn't mention the setup I'm doing.
Yeah.
It just said if you want to use a folder outside of your Dropbox account, which I suppose technically it is, but they were saying on the same hard drive.
Yeah.
But mine's actually located on a server in the house.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to just do a little tutorial on how you can get it sync your entire terabyte, even if you've got a small local hard drive.
Cool.
That's a long explanation. I'll try and make it slightly more concise when writing up, but I'll tell you what, I was really shocked. It's been a while since I've used Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
The last Pi I had was the Model B. So now with this Pi 2, I'm just really blown away by just how powerful a computer you can get.
Yeah, it's quite impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, £30 gets you a decent spec computer for surfing the internet when Flash dies, which hopefully will be soon. This little thing will be perfect. In fact, it'd be great for, you know, like Google Docs and things like that. Even, to be honest, it's powerful enough for a bit of web development. It's a real nice little box, and
it is crazy that it's so small, so cheap, runs Windows 10. If you install it, obviously, but yeah, the fact that it just can run Windows 10, and it's just this teeny tiny little thing.
Yeah, just bigger than a credit card.
That costs nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely nothing.
I can remember my first ever computer, DX2 66, had a 40 meg hard drive.
Steady on there,
cowboy. I know, and it had a 1 meg graphics card.
Yeah.
I think that computer, just for the computer, I think was around £1,200 for that computer. And I loved that computer. Back then, you didn't even need fans to keep the processors cool. They didn't generate enough heat to need a fan. So there was a tiny little heatsink on the CPU. But now, for £30, you get something that's only slightly bigger than perhaps that CPU was, like twice the size of the actual CPU. It's the entire computer. And I can pop in a 32 gig SD card.
Yeah.
And
nice.
Yeah. It's incredible. And computing has become so accessible from a price point now.
Yeah.
Because that took a long time to be able to afford a computer as a child. Mm. That was a lot of money. And now £1,200, it'd get you a Mac, which we all consider vastly overpriced.
Yeah.
And £30, and you can have a, and it's great, I can just plug in with your TV as well.
Yeah.
You know, so no longer you need this special monitor, you can just...
Well, you could plug my first computer into the TV as well.
Could you?
Yeah, the Acorn Electron 16K.
Oh, well, actually, yeah, tell you what, I did actually have a ZX Spectrum, so you could plug the Spectrum into a computer. But I was thinking like IBM PC era.
Yeah, I was quite late to the party on PCs, but
Because inside the Acorn, was it a BBC inside the Acorn?
It was essentially, yeah. It was. I think it was a little lower powered than the BBC B, but yeah, it was essentially made by the same company.
My mate next door had an Atari ST.
Yeah.
And that was the first computer I'd seen that took floppies.
Yeah, I had the Amiga 500 Plus.
Oh, hang on, it might have been the Amiga he had, not the Atari ST.
They were comparable, weren't they?
Yeah. God, I can still remember that. It's, oh my God, you get a game on that little disc.
Apart from Simon the Sorcerer, which was 7 discs.
I can remember, I think Windows 3.1, that used to be on a huge amount of floppies. And my next door one neighbour backed up I think he had like a 100 meg hard drive and he backed it up to floppies.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so he just had stacks and stacks of floppies because he was trying to back up his computer.
Yeah.
And then my friend got... Was it Little Big Adventure? Was it Little Big Adventure it was called?
Little Big Adventure, don't know.
Oh, was it called Little Big Adventure? But it was this game anyway. And it was a 2 gig install.
Whoa.
And this was, you know, back in those sort of years of computing.
Yeah.
And he only had a 400 meg hard drive. How are we going to install this game to play it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you had to put a bigger hard drive in the computer. Because he got a CD drive, a CD-ROM. Right. I was like, you got a CD-ROM?
Crazy.
Oh, my... Because I can remember getting my first ever CD writer, 250 quid.
Holy hell.
For a CD writer. Yeah.
Crazy. I remember one of my favourite things on the Amiga... Because back then, let's be honest, nobody was buying games.
Oh, pirating. If they reckon pirating is bad nowadays,
it was
pirating
crazy.
Back then. Because especially games that were on cassette,
yeah.
Because you go around your mates, they used to have high speed copy. Like, this was a copy.
Yeah.
You know,
high
done
speed
it.
Dubbing, yeah.
Yeah. Or so you knew someone had 2 floppy drives. Yeah.
I used to go to the car boot sale every Sunday, and games were £1 a disc for floppies from Amiga. And, yeah, one of my favourite things was when copying this, I'd got an external disc drive.
Oh, disc to disc.
So I could do disc to disc. But I'd got a copying program called Tetracopy, and you could play Tetris while you were copying discs.
So yeah, so now we've just admitted to being horrendous pirates when we were children.
We were young.
We were young. We didn't know it was that bad, did we?
Do we have a statute of limitations in the UK? I'm not sure.
I don't think we do.
No, probably not. Yeah, we're going to get arrested.
I know. They'll be after us for that. Do you know what? I don't think any of those companies would even exist anymore.
No.
That we were using the games of.
Yeah. And all the crack companies with the...
Oh, with the crack screens,
crack
yeah.
Crack screens and
the cracks. And yeah, the music and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
I can remember there was a guy in the village and he used to have a massive Mega Drive and SNES game collection.
Right.
So we used to do swaps.
Okay.
And
well, like a library.
Yeah, but he used to do direct swaps.
Oh, right.
So you could swap like a piece of rubbish game for like Streets of Rage 2. So we used to consider any game... A straight swap.
Just game for game.
And you had to, I think it was £1 you'd give him.
Yeah.
So it was just a guy, an official shop. So you'd go down to his house, he just had tons of games, and you'd go down. I used to do that all the time.
That doesn't sound dodgy at all.
Well, no, well, especially if you were the poor kid that were going in and swapping Streets of Rage 2 for...
Yep, small boys turning up at his doorstep. Yeah, it doesn't sound dodgy at all.
It was an innocent time back then. That, you know, that's just reminding me of one of my favourite ever gaming stories.
Go.
I'd saved up all my birthday money and pocket money to buy a video game from ICE.
All right, yeah. I remember
now,
ICE.
That was a local video game store where we live, but that was owned by two guys. One of the guys left, moved to Japan and opened up a company called Fire.
Oh.
And can you remember Fire Peripherals?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the guy who worked in ICE in Doncaster.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of people might actually recognise Fire Peripherals.
Crazy.
So yeah, I saved up all my money. I was like, right, I'm going to go in and buy this really cool game I've seen on Games Master. Which was a show, a video game show, wasn't it? Back in the day. You could win a golden joystick if you won. They should bring games like... Shows like that nowadays would be super popular again. I don't know why they don't bring that back, actually.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I went in and went...
YouTube exists.
I said, I want Claymation.
Oh, wow.
I said, I want Claymation. I took it to the counter and he went, you don't want that. He went, you don't want Claymation. He says, you want this. And from under the counter, he brought out the big box edition of Super Metroid.
Really?
He said, you want this. I was like, no, I want Claymation. And he went, no, honestly, trust me. You need Super Metroid. I was like, oh, I want Claymation. And he refused to sell me Claymation. And he would always sell me Super Metroid.
That's crazy.
And I was like, okay, I'll take Super Metroid. And of course, I go home, put in Super Metroid, and it's one of the best SNES games ever made.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went into my Claymation. They refused to sell me it and forced Super Metroid on me.
What a scumbag.
And that big... the big box as well, it was a real collector's version of it. Because, you know, you got the big user guide, which had loads of typos in.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if we've got something with typos, then it's far more collectible than the one without typos. Yeah. I sold my Super Metroid. Good game. Good game.
Yeah. Right, well, that was a bit of a nostalgia hit.
I know. We went back in time there ever so slightly. Just quickly, before we wrap up, Neil.
Yeah?
Why don't you tell us about the Twitter handle you got for Tech Enthusiast?
Is that a story I want to tell? It appears that it's a story that I am telling, regardless of whether I want to or not. We got a really, really good Twitter handle for Tech Enthusiast, and as you can imagine, it's Enthusiast Tech.
Really? Oh, yeah. I thought we had one that was slightly better than that.
Do you? I can't imagine which one would be better than that.
I thought we had Tech Enthusiast, and there was some kind of paperwork error, which meant you forgot the password, and then you forgot the password to the recovery email associated to the Twitter account. I thought that's what happened.
That doesn't sound like something I'd do, Sam. I'm not quite sure where you're getting this information from.
Or maybe someone just jumped in and registered those without our knowledge.
Somebody had a look and saw that we'd registered the website and then went, I tell you what, I'm going to buy the Twitter. Yeah, no, that's not what happened. I screwed up. I totally screwed up and forgot the password.
It did teach us how difficult it is to get something back, even when it definitely is yours.
Yeah.
We just can't get the recovery to work, can we?
No, and the issue is because we've never used it and we've never used the email address that's associated with it. So when it's asking us to prove it by talking about things that we have done previously with it, we've done nothing with it and therefore we can't prove it. So, but Enthusiast Tech is as close as we're going to get, unfortunately, for now.
Well, unfortunately, no one else can get Tech Enthusiast.
Yeah.
Because we have it. Yeah, we definitely. Just can't use it.
Definitely.
So if anything, I think we've covered bases, really.
Yeah.
I think we've done the right thing. Just in a bit of a roundabout way.
Yeah, and I'd just like to thank you for bringing that to the fore and highlighting my stupidity to any of the listeners.
I think just people might have wondered, why haven't they got Tech Enthusiast? And especially since we've got the domain.
Yeah.
So, well.
If you do want to get in touch with us, it's enthusiasttech. At enthusiasttech on Twitter is the way to get in touch with either me or Simon. And I think that's about it for this week.
I'm sure we'll have many retractions if we're not arrested for our filthy pirates through the 90s.
I think retractions are an important part of this podcast because we're not experts, but we are enthusiastic.